violated the Election Act and elections, but also violated Constitution of preamble states that the will decide the fate of their representatives through ballot.
The newly elected premier, Sharif, the oath of the office, congratulated by several neighboring countries, Iran and Turkey.
As a prime minister for a second time, he is pitted against a multitude of challenges, include fragile economic and political condition. Asik Azmi, Islamabad.
Elite Sunday threatening to go on to increase the quota for medical students from about 3,000 if the measures will not reach the physicians in less desirable specialties and locations.
Medical care, the conditions are relative burdens such as frequent, criminal, non-essential medical care. That the increased number of doctors will flow in medical care and rural medical care.
By the government plan, 9,000 residents, 13,000 across the country walked out on 5th. Patients have been scrambling staffed.
The government wants to win by winning votes from implementing populist or rational decision and without.
Polls suggest the South Korean public government and President Yoon Suk-yeol has increased since the standoff with doctors emerged.
Complaints against the leaders who organized this comply with the back-to-work order, fines and potential sentences. Both sides appear.
Medical schools don't have the capacity. Students say some administrators are scheduled for Seoul.
Italian cities were the scene of rallies in solidarity with Gaza and in condemnation of Israel's inhuman attacks against Palestinian civilians. Rome, Florence, Pisa, Syracuse, Grosseto. For the umpteenth time since early October, tens of thousands of people across Italy took to the streets of their respective cities to express their anger at the Italian government for unconditionally supporting the Israeli regime and at the international community for its complicity in Gaza genocide.
Today, more than ever, international law is just an abstract set of norms which prevails over humanity. Millions of people have died since the Sykes-Picot Accord over 100 years ago, and we're still arguing over the fact that Palestine is a state or not.
We'll go down in history as those who silently supported the genocide period.
Italy has not condemned Israel for the killing of unarmed Palestinians collecting aid in Gaza in an attack that killed more than 100 people on Thursday. However, Rome has called on the Israeli regime to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators behind the aid massacre to justice.
The Italian police crackdown on students during Palestine solidarity demonstrations in the past weeks has sparked outrage across Italy. Student collectives are at loggerheads with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and police over the rise in attacks against students.
The government and police repression has revealed the bare truth. Our country is a democracy only on paper. Ours are simply the democracies of double standards and deception. We have been attacked during our protest for peace in Ukraine, and we are attacked today. We perfectly know how democracies work in Western countries.
Thousands of artists, curators and critics have signed an open letter calling on the Venice Biennale, one of the world's largest contemporary visual art exhibitions, to exclude the Israeli National Pavilion from this year's art exhibition due to the brutal assaults against the civilians in Gaza. However, Italy's culture minister has firmly backed Israel's participation. Max Civili, Rome.
Across France, supporters of Palestine marched to denounce Israel's constant atrocities and war crimes during their latest invasion of Gaza. The world has been stunned by what's been dubbed the Flower Massacre. The death of over 100 Palestinians and the wounding of nearly 800 others after Israeli troops opened fire on civilians waiting for food.
We are here to ask for sanctions and to expose the hypocrisy of those who say they were shocked by the killing of people starving that were getting humanitarian aid, but at the same time don't do anything to stop the genocide.
Some 600,000 people in Gaza, or 25% of the population, are currently at risk of famine.
The French Foreign Ministry said the shootings were unjustifiable and backed a call for an independent investigation by the United Nations. French President Emmanuel Macron demanded truth, justice, respect for international law, and called for an immediate ceasefire.
In the Western world, which is and remains accomplice with the Israeli genocide, a slight change in the tone of all those Western leaders, including Emmanuel Macron. Remember that a few months ago, Macron was proposing a military coalition to fight the Palestinian resistance in Gaza.
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two.
Il a deux visages.
Macron is two-faced. It is only since the International Criminal Court announced that they would investigate Israel that Macron began to say just a few words which were not in total support of Israel. He continues to give arms to Israel and is as complicit as the leaders in Tel Aviv.
Many marchers carried signs of deceased United States soldier Aaron Bushnell, who set himself on fire at the Israeli embassy in Washington after declaring that he will no longer be complicit in genocide. After the start of Israel's invasion of Gaza, France imposed a nationwide ban on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around the country. Activists were forced to endure mass arrests, a record number of fines, and the infamous brutality of France's police. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Once a boomtown of the Industrial Revolution, Rochdale in northwest England has been reliably Labour for years. Until now. This was an election that saw allegations of fraud, desperate attempts like this one by the right-wing Reform Party.
Make sure you prevent George Galloway from being your MP for Rochdale.
And dominated by the massacre in Gaza.
From the river to the sea.
The result came hours after polls closed.
Hereby declare that George Galloway is duly elected.
A sweeping victory for a veteran anti-war pro-Palestine campaigner who reminded everyone that the anger in Britain over the Gaza genocide is not confined to the Muslim community only.
Every Muslim is bitterly angry at Keir Starmer and his misnamed Labour Party. But you would be very foolish if you did not realize that millions of other citizens of our country are.
Rochdale is home to a 30,000-strong Muslim community.
George Galloway from Rochdale.
Apart from bread and butter issues such as the declining public services, unemployment, poverty, and crime that have racked the constituency for years, for the majority of the voters here, there was more to take into account.
This as a blessing to basically take our word straight to Parliament, and if one person just goes in there and asks for a ceasefire, ask for all these genocide to stop, it's more than any Labour candidate or Labour MP or anyone has done for many years.
He can bring change to us locally, but also nationally and internationally. So the thing is, the ongoing issue with Gaza is a big issue, and it's an international issue. But at the same time, it's not just a Muslim issue. It's about human rights.
The election was triggered by the death in January of opposition Labour Party MP Tony Lloyd. He was replaced by this man, Azhar Ali. On voting day, though, Labour's campaign centre lay shuttered after the party abandoned Ali for making anti-Israel remarks. By-elections don't always represent the wider national picture. They are protest votes with a local focus. Last time around, Labour won the seat here by 10,000 votes, but this time they lost. And perhaps that is a sign of what's to come, both for Labour and the Conservatives, with the general elections only months away. Saeed Pourreza, Rochdale, Greater Manchester.
On
On Thursday, a demonstration was staged in Rome's Parliament Square in protest against the arrest of Anan Yaish, a 37-year-old Palestinian citizen from Tulkarm in the West Bank. Anan was arrested without charge or justifiable cause by the Italian police in the central Italy mountain city of L'Aquila on January 29 on an extradition request by the Israeli government, which Italy's justice ministry acquiesced straight away. A month later, Anan, who holds a valid residence permit in Italy since 2017, is still detained in a prison wing housing only terrorists in the city of Terni.
Anan's detention is similar to Israel's administrative detention, when a person is kept in prison without trial, without having committed an offense. Israel even wants to intimidate the Palestinians who live abroad.
For Israel, he has a culpa.
Israel believes Anan has committed one and only very serious offense. He has not given up the fight. That's why they are behind him. Italy is surveillance subservient as usual with Israel. Our authorities have arrested an innocent man who is just a member of the Palestinian resistance.
During the demonstration, activists strongly condemned Italy's government for its complicity in the genocide in Gaza.
We know full well how heavy Israel's influence is on the Italian government. Prime Minister Meloni wanted to ban pro-Palestine demonstrations. We have seen her going hand-in-hand with Netanyahu.
More pro-Palestine protests will be held in Italy at the weekend. Large demonstrations will take place in Rome, Florence and Pisa. Meanwhile, a group of Italian lawmakers announced they will travel to the Rafah border between the Gaza Strip and Egypt. They say they want to provide the Italian government with a testimony of the tragedy the Palestinians are experiencing as a result of Israel's crimes. Max Civili, Rome.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
It is unrealistic to observe the genocidal Zionist regime war on Gaza without understanding its strategic dimension, in particular the current phase of the Palestinian struggle for freedom from occupation. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, "The daily war crimes committed by the Israeli regime's military in Gaza make it easy for the global audience to watch with horror the brutality of the occupying regime and the suffering of Palestinians. The Israeli regime has a long history of massacring Palestinians and Arabs, but now, with the advent of social media, the world is waking up to the harsh reality of this child-killing machine. It is essential to return to the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm on October 7, 2023. The facts on the ground remain that the victory of the Palestinian resistance in the world's largest concentration camp will go down in history above everything else in the ongoing Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip."
Everything related to this historic victory in the besieged territory last October is linked to regional developments after the resistance movement Hamas dramatically shook the Israeli regime's intelligence and security apparatus. The Palestinian resistance is not fighting at the moment because it has a mission. The mission was to some extent achieved on October 7th. Right now, it is fighting to defend Palestinian civilians. These broad daylight Israeli regime massacres and war crimes are indeed barbaric and join the long and dark history books of the Israeli occupation. Yet, the historic Palestinian victory will always be the defining goal in any negotiations and the operation that changed the military equation between the Gaza resistance and the Zionist regime army should not distract observers from the mission of the resistance. October 7, 2023 accomplished this mission to a large extent. It was a mission that destroyed the Israeli regime's army's self-proclaimed military superiority over the Palestinian resistance. All efforts by the regime's military and intelligence officials to reverse this equation and resume normal services to their American masters have failed to materialize. The mission that restored Palestine on the map has also seen the Palestinian struggle back in its rightful place alongside all the rights of Palestinians that had long been ignored by the international community despite being enshrined in international law. Al-Aqsa Storm is what achieved this. After decades of silence, the state of Palestine sits at the top of the agenda, where it belongs. Governments across the globe, along with meetings between world leaders rushing back and forth to West Asia and beyond, are discussing Palestine with the seriousness it deserves. Palestinian state, which currently occupies Al-Quds as its capital, is back on the table among top officials who had forgotten that there was a Palestinian state in the first place. All Israeli, American, and British military attempts to return West Asia to how it was before Operation Al-Aqsa Storm have proven futile. They have not and will not succeed, not in this lifetime. If Americans seek to go to war on behalf of its proxy illegitimate entity in West Asia, it would effectively end the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land. The Zionist regime has been defeated, its global image has been disgraced, its economy is in shatters, and its army in Gaza is enduring what the U.S. faced in Afghanistan, a disgraceful drubbing. Militarily, the Israeli regime army is all over the place against the resistance in Gaza. To advance in urban warfare, Israeli special forces need their backup units to secure and hold on to the areas that the elite forces had captured so the latter can advance to the next area. After more than 4 months of unbridled aggression, the Zionist regime military has not achieved this simple military strategy in one single spot in the entire Gaza Strip. Its special forces cannot hold onto an area, not to talk about backup units that are in total disarray. Month ago, the regime regularly announced that it had taken control of northern Gaza. Today, Hamas is still fighting in northern Gaza neighborhoods as well as central and southern Gaza. Where does this leave America, the country that promised protection to the Israeli regime on October 7th, the country that has been supplying arms to Tel Aviv regime worth billions of dollars? In the aftermath of Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, the U.S. regime sent its aircraft carriers and military assets to West Asia, instructing Tel Aviv regime to focus on Gaza. Never in the history of the Zionist occupation and all the wars it has waged has the U.S. provided so much support to the regime in Tel Aviv. It has supplied more than $260 billion to Israel since the Second World War, but the kind of support it has given to Benjamin Netanyahu regime since October 7th is unprecedented. Militarily, diplomatically, politically, as well as in the media, and so much more because the regime has been defeated. The recent reports of tension and disagreements between the Zionist and American or British leaders is part of the Western media psychological war to distract viewers from the reality, which is that Tel Aviv and Washington are literally tied to the hip. Washington and London are publicly calling on Tel Aviv to think carefully before expanding its genocidal campaign to Rafah. This is while Capitol Hill is racing against time to ship more bombs to the Zionist regime's military that will arrive in Tel Aviv just in time to drop on the civilians in Rafah. Nevertheless, the last thing America wants is a war of attrition with the axis of resistance in West Asia. Yet the Israeli regime military has proven incapable of achieving anything in Gaza. It can't compete with the Palestinian resistance and is targeting women and children of Gaza in a bid to pressure Hamas. That has opened up three notable West Asian fronts: anti-Israeli resistance movements in Lebanon, Yemen, and Iraq. Some commentators in the region have tried their best to downplay the resistance of Hezbollah in Lebanon and Ansarullah in Yemen against the Israeli regime. It hasn't gone down well for these pundits. Hezbollah has been displaced tens of thousands of Israeli settlers in the northern occupied territories. By the regime's own admission, and carried out more than 1,000 military operations since October 7th. Some estimates have put the figure of displaced settlers at over 250,000. This is Hezbollah's contribution to the axis of resistance. Never in the history of the Zionist regime has settlers been displaced. Against the backdrop of the mediators that traveled to Beirut calling on Hezbollah to end its operations, the Lebanese resistance sent a clear message. Its resistance operations will cease when the Israeli slaughter campaign in Gaza ceases. Ansarullah-led government in Yemen has imposed an embargo in the Red Sea on Israeli vessels transiting or docking in the occupied Palestinian ports. All the American and British warships deployed to the waters and all US-UK attacks on Yemen have failed to deter the Yemeni military or end its embargo on Israeli regime maritime navigation. Furthermore, all of Washington's indirect messages sent to Yemen to end the Israeli regime naval blockade and all the White House incentives to have Sana'a airport and Hodeidah seaport fully functional and the payments of all Yemeni civil servants and promises to avoid adding Ansarullah to the U.S. list of terrorist organizations have failed to force change in the Arab country's strategy. The Yemeni resistance, operating from the poorest country in West Asia region, has responded in line with its courageous national ancient history by rejecting all American offers. Yemen says the war started in Gaza and will end in Gaza. Until then, no Israeli ships will be docking in the regime's ports, and all US-UK attacks have only expanded the range of Yemeni fire to Israeli-American British vessels and warships. Yemeni resistance leader Abdul Malik al-Houthi hailed a major victory for the resistance movement in a speech recently, saying the US and UK failed to secure the passage of any ships heading to Israeli-occupied ports over the last week. They were unable to protect these ships. They have no longer protect even American British ships, and this is a real and major victory for us, he asserted. U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria have been subject to some 200 attacks by the Islamic resistance in Iraq since October 7th, again in solidarity with Gaza. American attacks on Iraqi soil have not only failed to deter the will of the resistance, but increased their determination to end the U.S. operation. Again, some analysts on primetime TV shows can't help but make viewers cringe by dramatizing a U.S. bomber that flew so much distance from the United States to Iraq and attacked vital military infrastructure belonging to Hashd al-Sha'bi on the Syrian border in true Hollywood style. And so what? What's the difference if a U.S. warplane took off from an aircraft carrier in the region? And what is vital military infrastructure? Within minutes, the Iraqi resistance fired missiles attacking U.S. bases, again inflicting heavy damage. The United States says it does not seek a wider war in the region, but as things stand, the Biden administration is blindly heading to a war of attrition in the region in a bid to please an Israeli regime premier who is knowingly escalating regional tensions to escape a court trial and a possible prison sentence.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, for 5 months now, the Israeli regime has been pounding the Gaza Strip by their gunships, drones, fighter jets, hitting civilians at will. They've used phosphorus bombs, snipers, and ground troops, and are even testing out new weapons on the people of Gaza. Despite all of this, they have not been able to break the will of the Palestinian people. So now they've increased the use of their latest weapon, and that is starvation. They are starving the kids of Gaza to death and depriving them of water, too. This as the death toll continues to rise and now stands at over 30,500 people as the international community continues to debate whether a ceasefire will be implemented soon or not. To help me look at all of this, I'd like to welcome my guests to the Spotlight. Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway, Oslo. And Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Berkeley. Well, thank you both for being with me. I'm going to start off in Oslo. And Glenn, I'm going to read a partial definition of war crimes as declared by the United Nations: murder, mutilation, cruel treatment and torture, taking of hostages, intentionally directing attacks against the civilian population, intentionally directing attacks against buildings dedicated to religion, education, art, science, or charitable purposes, historical monuments, or hospital. I mean, is there even one of these that the Israeli regime has not committed in Gaza?
Well, I think this began with, as you mentioned, military strikes against the civilian population. But what we see now is taking it to a whole new level, because this is actually blockade on aid. And it's all in the open in front of the camera. So you see Israelis blocking and preventing aid trucks from entering, very much for the explicit purpose of denying food for the civilian population in Gaza. So it is a deliberate man-made famine, which we are about to now see unravel completely. And even when some food has been able to get through, we see that the Israel army actually opens fire on civilians attempting to get some access to this food. And of course, we have the somewhat absurd scenario where the U.S. Airdrops aid in seemingly heroic effort, but this is a very strange U.S. position. It's very expensive to airdrop food, and it's also very little. And again, this is the American weapons being supplied to Israel, which are used to deny food to the civilians. And at the same time, they're airdropping food in because the Americans claim they're not able to get food in otherwise because the people they're arming are preventing them from delivering the aid. So it's very hard to see if this is weakness on behalf of the U.S. government or if it's just crocodile tears that, you know, allowing them to support the starvation of Palestinians while at the same time trying to distance themselves from it. Either way, it's obviously a humanitarian catastrophe.
Interesting point you just made, Glenn. What about that, Rick? Thinking about the Americans and dropping food there, food boxes, on the one hand, they could just stop supporting the regime, and of course they encourage it every day and are supporting it. On the other hand, many say that it's also a part of the psychological warfare, just to have these Palestinians torturing them more and running after food. I mean, your assessment of why they would even do this like they are.
I think it is to public relations, to give the image that they're concerned about the Palestinians, the plight in Gaza, when in reality they could stop it in a few days. But if the Biden was to pick up the phone and call Netanyahu and says it has to come to an immediate end. Of course, the U.S. in the past has done that on a few occasions. President Eisenhower did it in 1956, and Ronald Reagan actually did it in 1982 when Israel finally, after extended period of time after they massacred so many people at Sabra and Shatila. But the bottom line is that the Western governments are backing Israel. It's not just the U.S. The U.K. and Germany are also complicit, and they are a big reason that this has continued. Where we're at right now is, according to the United Nations, 576,000 people in Gaza, a quarter of the population, are facing death by starvation. Not only that, Israel has compounded the crisis by a few weeks ago, they killed the head of security for Hamas, who was protecting and making sure that aid was going in, was being distributed in a reasonable manner and a fair manner. So Israel has disabled it. They basically created the situation where there's chaos in some situations because you've got people who are starving, and the organizations that have been so successful in administering aid in a fair and proportionate way, like UNRWA and the World Food Program, have been prevented by Israel from doing their job.
Well, Glenn, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Right to Food has said that using food as a tool of war and denying food is a war crime. With this being said, and all that has taken place in front of the eyes of the world in real time, your perspective of what more evidence does the international community need to stop this genocide?
Well, it's hard to say what more evidence is needed. All of this is happening in front of the cameras. And again, the ICJ ruled that this was a plausible scenario of a genocide. And it explicitly gave a call for Israel to halt any potential acts of genocide. Now, as we now see very correctly, as just mentioned, there's a lot of countries who are backing Israel in doing this, and not just the United States. We even see countries like Germany was increased its support for Israel. So we even saw now recently Nicaragua trying to take Germany to the ICJ for being complicit in the genocide. And this is, it's not hyperbolic. This is the ICJ has ruled, and the countries still supporting it are now making themselves complicit. And so I just don't see what evidence is required now. There's been deliberate attack on civilian infrastructure, so the Palestinians would not have anything to come back to, so they would leave. And again, the intentions about ethnic cleansing, at least, is also very, very explicit. They're trying to make deals in order to get the Palestinians to go to other countries. And this is what's happening, making the Gaza unlivable for Palestinians. And this is effectively the next step, not just destroying hospitals and civilian infrastructure, but now also creating a humanitarian crisis through starvation so horrific that the Palestinians would be ethnically cleansed or relocated somewhere else.
Well, as I said at the beginning, it seems that there is no crime that the regime hasn't committed, and even the dead have not been immune to Israeli crimes. Today we saw the Zionist regime bombing a mass grave and body parts being strewn in northern Gaza. I mean, what does this mean, Rick? It's so mind-boggling. I mean, why hasn't the Zionist regime been stopped, and why haven't there been arrest warrants issued for its leaders?
Well, it's in short, because the West still has the amount of control that they do, unfortunately. They're able to commit war crimes in plain view and get away with it. I think the time is limited that they're going to be able to do that, because more and more of the world, especially in the global South, is recognizing the hypocrisy and in this case the genocide that's taking place under the watch of the West, and specifically the U.S., which of course has the most influence on Israel. Israel's dependent on U.S. Funding, military and economic support, $3.8 billion every year, and now they're trying to get $14 billion extra right now. So I think the crisis that has emerged out of Gaza since October 7 is having a pivotal effect on perceptions around the world. As was remarked earlier, the filing of charges at the ICJ by Nicaragua against Germany for collaborating in genocide. These are measures that hopefully are going to bear fruit, and more people are going to see the reality and demand change. We're at a critical point in history right now, where Israel is committing these crimes in plain view, as Professor Deason was saying.
Is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to the Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Glenn, why does the collective West support this genocide?
I think it's just traditional support for Israel. It's always, been this way. But of course, on the 7th of October, a lot of Western governments were justifiably outraged by the attacks by Hamas, and they then gave their unconditional support for Israel. And I think that many did not know what they signed up for, because when Israel obviously were not only after retaliation or getting Hamas, but seeking to solve the so-called Palestinian problem, I think many simply just kept their current position.
Let me just jump in here, Glenn, because you said they were outraged at the situation, what happened on October 7th. How come they weren't outraged 75 years, the 75 years of oppression that the Palestinian people have seen, that they have been displaced? And, of course, the collective West, of course, was responsible for this to begin with in the creating of the Zionist entity. How come they weren't outraged up until that time that the Palestinian people have been being killed just continuously, at least since 1948, but of course even before?
Well, no, I'm not making any excuses for this. Since the 7th of October, I just want to say that's been an incrementalism. But of course, you're very correct about this. And And this is one of the problem which the West faces now. I mean, the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, he recently made the statement that that the global South now looked at the West in terms of being hypocritical, applying double standards. Well, this obviously appears to be one of the greatest understatements. What we're watching is a complete moral collapse. On one hand, we see, for example, the EU lecturing other countries about human rights, and now also backing effectively a genocide. So this is quite shocking. And I think what is forcing, hopefully, change would be what you can call people power, because as all these images appear on the screen, you see more and more people distancing themselves from their own governments. And I think this is the kind of pressure that's needed, because so far a lot of the governments are simply completely devoted to Israel, and right, you know, through these slogans of right to self-defense and all.
Well, Rick, the Palestinian representative to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, addressing the UN, said that the international community has accepted the dehumanization of Palestinians. He said they allowed Israel to destroy Palestinian homes, displace the people, dispossess them, then wound them and kill them, all while looking the other way. And this impunity over the years has led to the genocide we are witnessing today in Gaza. Your thoughts on his comments?
I think they're very accurate. This has been going on for a long time, as you were pointing out. This is last fall was the 75th anniversary of the Nakba. At the United Nations, there have been various good attempts to change the situation. There was the right of return, Resolution 194, which Israel, when it joined the UN, it agreed to. And yet there's been this impunity, as you say, as you correctly say, that's gone on. And the people in Gaza have meanwhile been suffering ever since 1967, and especially since 2007. In the late 1990s, the Israeli journalist Amira Haas wrote a book called Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege. So that's just an indication of how long this has been going on. But it's at a totally new level now, where you've got blanket bombing of the tiny global, the tiny Gaza Strip. Most people don't realize how small it is. But you've got blanket bombing. You've got Israel preventing the supply of medicines, of water, of food, and other forms of aid, of energy. It's at a whole new level now, and I think this is going to be a wake up call. This is a wake up call and it's a pivotal moment in history where the whole world can see what the reality is, as opposed to the mythology.
Well, Glenn, looking at the current situation, would you say that all countries which have played a part in creating and supporting the Israeli regime are all responsible for the current genocide or not?
Well, I'm always hesitant about collective guilt, but in terms of countries who have been backing this for so long, I think this, seeing what's happening now, I think it's important to recognize this did not come out of nowhere. This has been going on for so many decades, and I think there's been also this effort of denouncing any resistance to occupation as terrorism. Now, obviously, when there's attack on civilians, it always falls in the category of terrorism, which should of course be condemned. But no one has really defined a clear role for Palestinians. So, well, what has been the position for Palestinians who've been living under occupation, or who has been facing ethnic cleansing? No one has ever spoken about their right for self-defense, which has always been implicit that they can either live under occupation or face or be called terrorists and face repercussions. So I think, to a large extent, there is a lot of collective guilt going around that we have allowed this to go so far. And effectively, I think there's a lot of dishonesty as well, because people still talk about the two-state solutions, even when the Israelis are very openly saying they will not allow this to happen. So So there is, yeah, I think a lot of crocodile tears and hypocrisy and collective guilt, obviously, going all around.
Rick, so at the end of the day, does it mean that there is no international community nor international law to protect Palestinian kids?
That's what it looks like. There's law, and you know, the International Court of Justice hopefully is going to stiffen their call that they issued a month ago. We're waiting to see what Israel responds, because they were instructed or ordered to provide a report within 30 days, and that time is up. So we're waiting to see what happens. The good thing is that Israel's impunity, Israel's crimes against humanity, and the false charges of anti-Semitism are more and more seen around the world, and even in the United States. Growing numbers of people are speaking out against this. They're not only speaking out against Israeli policy, they're speaking out against Washington's policy. We had a big demonstration in San Francisco yesterday. People were denouncing the Israeli attacks on Gaza and the looming invasion of Rafah. You know, that's just a sign of how much things have changed in the last, since October 7.
Mm-hmm. Well, Glenn, do you think the past 5 months have reiterated the importance of countries to be independent and militarily strong, because there is no law that will save them? And unfortunate reality of this world is that might makes right.
Well, this is the so-called international anarchy. Any state who wants to be, or any people who want to be secure, would have to effectively be able to protect themselves. Ideally, we should aspire to have some kind of an international community which reduces the dependence on having a hard power to ensure one's survival. But again, I think I can't really think of any better example than Palestine at the moment to see just such a glaring failure of the international community. And I think it's unique for many reasons. You asked before as well, and I think that at least in Europe, this idea that you have to pick a side, and nobody wants to go against Israel, especially because of our history in Europe, given the Holocaust, or in the way, not just by the Germans, but how the Europeans largely ignored the suffering of the Jews back then. But of course, this is it becomes very grotesque to use this as a justification for what's now becoming a genocide, or has become a genocide against the Palestinians. Also, I don't even think that this should be framed as picking a side. I don't think this is even Israel's interest. I think Israel will suffer greatly from this. They're isolating themselves, and it will. I think they're on the path to suicide if they continue like this. So I don't think anyone gains from this. This is horrific for the Palestinians. This is could be a suicide decision for the Israelis, and of course, possibility of regional war and global instability. This is an overall disaster for everyone, the way I would see it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Europeans, some of them feel that it's hard for them to pick a side, because, of course, this is a Holocaust in itself. Well, Rick, would you say the reality of this genocide has been the biggest recruiter for the Palestinian resistance, since people have realized that there is no choice for them but to resist?
Mm-hmm. It's certainly been a huge wake-up call, and a lot of people who were unaware of the situation in Gaza, were unaware of Palestine 8 months ago, are aware of it now. And they're not only aware of it, but they're speaking out, they're putting pressure on their congressional representatives. There's all sorts of actions happening every day in the United States, confronting politicians, confronting media. That's the good thing that's happened, but it's of course at a tremendous price. The Air Force Airman Aaron Bushnell, of course, who took the extreme act of taking his own life, I think there's widespread respect for him, for what he did. And that's just another marker about you know, how much things have changed and how awareness of Palestine. And, you know, it's in a way Palestine is symbolic because they're oppressed people, there are starving people, there are people like that all around the world. And this is just one extreme case. And I think we are going to see a shift of where the hypocrisy of the so-called Western rules-based order is going to be openly defied and challenged. And hopefully we can see some much better things ahead. I think the Nicaraguan application at the ICJ, South Africa's application to the ICJ, these are indicators of how much things have changed.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on the Spotlight. Glenn Dyson, professor of political science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo, and Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Berkeley. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.